to think about ministry trainees. And really, the big picture behind this is, how can we be involved, as leaders and as our churches, in growing the next crop of church leaders? How can we be involved in that? And that's what we're going to be thinking about in this session. But just to kick us off, why not turn to one or two people near you, make sure you do know who you are talking to, and just share for 2 minutes on how it is that you ended up in ministry. What were the key stages that led you to into the church ministry that you're now in? The key stages along that way. Okay? I'll give you a couple of minutes. I'm sure there were some fascinating stories being told of how it is you ended up in ministry. What we want to do now is to think how we can help future people make some of those steps. 10 years ago, I served on a ministry training scheme in London. And as part of that training, I was sent to a conference. It was a 938 conference. You may have heard of 938, based on Matthew 938. An organisation that promotes ministry training schemes, or as they call them, apprenticeships, nationally. I went on this conference. There were about 20 of us, and it was a very helpful time. This January, 10 years on, I went back on the same conference, this time as a leader. And as I sat there, I was surrounded by over 100 apprentices who come on that same conference. And I got very excited about this as I went and reflected on it. That meant that over 100 people, and obviously not all apprentices were there, but those that were, over 100 people were setting aside 2011 to learn ministry skills and hopefully go on to future ministry. And it got me thinking, if just half of them, say 50, went into full-time church leadership positions, that's 50 more church leaders. That means in 10 years, 500 more people in full-time church leadership positions. That is a really exciting prospect. And it just got me thinking that maybe, you know, there are those crucial turning points, aren't there, in the history of the church. Maybe something that we'll look back on and say, that was a good move, actually, was the introduction of these apprenticeships and these ministry training schemes, because they do seem to be a really fruitful way of raising up more church leaders. And it's this conviction that's led the SGP to want to promote ministry training schemes. And in that sense, that's why I'm here today. And what the Ministry Trainees Task Group have done is basically to think about how we can encourage more ministry training schemes in Sussex and how we can support churches and you in this. And to that end, we've put together this 7 steps guide to ministry training schemes. You've got them printed out on this green piece of paper. I'm sure you'll be aware that you can get all sorts of Bible study guides that are now 6 steps to this, 6 steps to encouragement. So we thought, well, let's do 7 steps to ministry training schemes. And conveniently, they all begin with an S. These steps, they're not there to be followed slavishly. They're not even necessarily in order, but they would help you, if you wanted to put together a ministry training scheme, whatever it might look like, within your context. I hope you'll find it useful. So if you haven't got a scheme, we really hope this might help you think about how you might set one up. If you do already have a scheme, we hope that you'll plunder it for our suggestions for good ideas that might help strengthen your existing scheme. But what's going to happen now is different members of the task group are going to take us through those 7 steps so that we know what they all are.
Hi, my name is PJ. I'm a curate here at Adult Saints Linfield and on the ministry training task group. Where should we start? Well, I guess all things have to start with prayer, don't we, if we want something to be fruitful for God. So the place where we start is by praying. Why should we be praying? Well, the reason why we should pray is because actually God must be at the centre of everything we do. If we want leaders to be raised up. Anyone's feeling seasick? We want God to be at the centre of everything we do. If leaders are to be raised up, we've got to look to him to be raising those people up. Why else should we be praying? Because Jesus said so. We've already heard Matthew 9:38 mentioned. Pray to the owner of the harvest that he will send out workers to gather in his harvest. So if it's a prayer that Jesus says we should be praying, then we should be praying that. We should be praying that God will raise up leaders. Obviously, ministry training schemes are not the only way to be doing that. When God points people out to us, it's not the only way to be training them, but it is a good way. And we'd encourage you to pursue it. So we need to be praying for it. Well, how can we go about praying for it? Well, we should be praying personally. We should be praying personally as ministers in our own personal prayer times. We should be praying that God would raise up workers from within our congregation. Maybe there we're looking out and we think, I've got no idea who could be, who potentially might be a teacher of God's word, a possible pastor amongst us. Who could they be? We should be praying that God will raise those people up and point us to who those people may be that we should be investing in. Maybe they're people you already know. Maybe you think, crumbs, you know, I've been thinking about that person for a long time, so I think they'd be great to go on a scheme like this. It'd be really good to invest time in them. So you can be praying for people by name, personally. But also we should be praying corporately, not only individually, but corporately. Why not making something like once a month in your services, make sure that the person who's leading the prayers is praying that prayer that Jesus told us to pray, that God will raise up workers for the harvest field. So regularly on the church's agenda, from the front, publicly, people are praying because we want the next generation of leaders to be raised up. At your prayer meetings, there's always an item on your prayer meeting. I think it probably should be, shouldn't it? We should be praying about this every time we gather for the next generation of leaders. How about priority for groups within your church? Maybe you have a youth team, maybe you've got an eldership team, maybe you've got a home group team. In all these different groups, make sure they're praying for the next generation of leaders in their groups, next generation of elders, whatever it may be. Make sure in across the groups of the church, we're praying this prayer Jesus told us to pray. And then I thought of praying SGPly. I couldn't think of a better word than that. Let's be praying not just for our own church, but let's be praying for the whole Sussex Gospel Partnership. On the website, we're hoping to put a list of churches that are running schemes, so that when you come to your prayer meetings or personal prayer, or maybe from in the service when you're praying, people could be mentioning some of the churches and praying for them specifically. But those churches that are running these schemes, leaders may be raised up through them. We'd like to have a list of ministry trainees on the website, perhaps just their first names, so we could be praying for people specifically in the different churches. But also, why not be printing off a map and looking at areas within Sussex where there aren't Sussex Gospel Partnership churches? Well, who are going to be the leaders who are going to go into these new places? Something like Battle. Anybody from Battle here? I don't know if there's good churches in Battle or not. It'd be a good place to be praying for, wouldn't it? That God would be raising up ministers who would be going to take the gospel to Battle. Where are they going to come from?
There is a good church in Bethel.
There is good, fantastic. Well then, we should be praying for them. Let's be praying for the whole partnership. Praying for the ministry training scheme, that's the place to start.
Brilliant. Well, I hope that you are excited about how you could be involved in raising up the next generation of church leaders. We realise that maybe actually we need to encourage others to get excited too. And that's why the second step is to share the vision. We really want to be able to share the vision of ministry training schemes. To that end, we've come up with a short presentation that we'd be very willing to bring out to your church leaderships, or your eldership meetings, your PCC meetings, whatever they might be, where one of our task group would be happy to come, do the short presentation, and then answer questions that might be of interest. To help people catch the vision and see how they could implement a scheme like this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you the presentation so you'll know exactly what you'd get if you invited us. Please do invite us. And of course, do make suggestions to us about how we might tailor it specifically to your setup or any particular issues that you would like to be dealt with. But anyway, here goes. Here's the presentation to give you a flavour of what we could bring with us. So, good evening. My name is James. James Packman. I'm the minister of a couple of small churches just south of Tunbridge Wells. Now, it's important that we're south of Tunbridge Wells because obviously Tunbridge Wells is in Kent, but I'm in Sussex, and that's why I'm involved in the Sussex Gospel Partnership. And one of my roles within the Sussex Gospel Partnership is to encourage churches to think about training up more folk for ministry. So I'm going to do a short presentation for you, and then there'll be a time for questions afterwards. Let me start with a picture. What do you see? Well, one person might look at it and think, oh, that, doesn't that look lovely and peaceful? The sheep seem content. There's plenty of other sheep, plenty of grass to graze on. But then another person comes up and takes a look at the picture. And they see danger. They may be happy sheep, but they're not safe sheep. There doesn't seem to be a shepherd. There aren't any fences. There's no way of them being protected from danger. Well, that's the image that Jesus gives us in Matthew chapter 9. He's looking out at a great number of people, and he says this. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. It's from Matthew 9, verse 36. Jesus looks beyond the happiness and enjoyment of life that many seem to enjoy, and he sees souls that are lost. He sees sheep that are vulnerable, people who are powerless to save themselves. Now, we know that in Sussex there are thousands of people. What do we think when we look at them? People shopping, enjoying themselves, relaxing, exercising, working, travelling, laughing, texting, playing. Or do we see people as Jesus sees them? People who are lost, vulnerable, and in danger. Well, of course, Jesus didn't just stand to one side. He's just not content to leave things the way they are. He wants those sheep cared for. So he does two things. We read in Matthew 9 that he calls his disciples to pray and to act. Which means that he calls us to pray and to act. And to do this, he moves us to another farming image. And we're now in the harvest field. So Jesus now pictures our world as a harvest field with people who are ripe to come to faith in Jesus. But there's a problem. The harvest may be ready, but where are the harvest labourers? So then we read. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." To Jesus, there is a solution to the problem. A solution to the shortage of harvest workers. And that's to pray. And I take it that if Jesus tells us we should pray for something, it would be good if we prayed for it. But of course, Jesus doesn't stop there. He doesn't just pray, he acts. And in the very next verse, moving into Matthew chapter 10, we read that Jesus called his 12 disciples together and sent them out to the surrounding towns and villages. And here we see that Jesus' strategy is a very simple one. He spent time investing in 12 men. He has prepared them for ministry and for mission. And now he sends them out so they can experience firsthand what that work is like. But he doesn't just push them out and turn his back on them. They're soon back, reporting their activities. And Jesus continues to mentor them in their ministry. So that when Jesus eventually returns to his Father, they are ready for ministry, to get on with the work in the harvest field. So Jesus has given us a simple model for raising up Christian workers, and it is this conviction that has led the Sussex Gospel Partnership to promote ministry training schemes. I think this might be useful. So what is a ministry training scheme? In essence, it's about a church adopting an individual and investing in them, nurturing them. It would be someone who's willing to put aside a substantial amount of time so that they can experience ministry within that church and be trained in ministry with the aim of developing their gifts for serving Christ in his church. Now, the actual makeup of the scheme will vary hugely from church to church, and there are lots of issues to consider. Things like, do we pay them? If so, how much? How are we going to accommodate them? How long will they come for? What areas of service are they going to be involved in? These are all negotiable and need to be worked out. But there are three core elements to every ministry training scheme. The first is, it needs to involve learning. It's about spending time with Jesus in the scriptures, so that that person will grow in godliness and learn about godly ministry. I'm glad to say that there is an outstanding ministry training course run here in Sussex. This is an excellent way to train someone up. And it does mean that it doesn't have to be done within the own church, your own church setup, so much. So you don't have to find the time and resources to do a substantial amount of training. The second core element is they need to serve. This involves hands-on ministry in a church context. It's really important they get practical experience of ministry so that they can develop their ministry skills. Whether those skills be teaching, administration, leadership, pastoral, or other skills. And at the same time, of course, their service will increase the amount of ministry that is going on within your church. Finally, test. It will be an opportunity for them to test what ministry God might be calling them to, whether it is further service in your church or another church. But whether they go on to become a minister or some other career path, they will take their new skills with them and be able to use them in whichever church they worship. So those are the three core elements: learn, serve and test. But as I say, schemes will be flexible. So just to give you a flavour, here are three examples of how a scheme might work in practice. I want to introduce you to three people. Here we are. Here's Lizzie. This is Lizzie Woodward. She went to Nottingham University and studied biochemistry, but then decided that she wanted to investigate church work. So she signed up for a one-year ministry training scheme at a church on the coast in Sussex. But she enjoyed it so much she stayed on for a total of 3 years. She did need some money to cover her rent while this was happening, so she did some part-time work. And as part of her role, was involved in a wide range of church ministry. Apparently a highlight for her specifically was working with the 14 to 18 year old girls. Having finished the ministry training scheme, she now works for a charity operating in the schools in her area, but she does still worship and serve at the church where she did her ministry training scheme. That is just one example of what a ministry scheme might look like. How about another example? This is Hugh. Hugh Lowry's out for a walk on the Seven Sisters. Hugh's a former headmaster who has recently retired. But on retirement, he was keen to serve in his church. So he enrolled on the excellent ministry training course that the Sussex Gospel Partnership provide, and he did both years, studied for both years in the course, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, in his circumstances, he didn't need any accommodation or an income. The church didn't have to look after him in that way, because he already had these provided for him. But as a result of his training, he now serves regularly, preaching and leading services within his church. Now, in Hugh's case, it wasn't a formal ministry training scheme that Hugh applied for. It was more the church being flexible and saying, yes, we will help invest in you and train you so that you can be better equipped for ministry. And it worked well for all concerned. Final example is Gavin. He's also out for a walk. It doesn't look quite the gentle scenery of Sussex there. Gavin left school at 16 and trained to be a plumber or a heating and gas engineer, to use the proper title. At 19 he became a Christian and joined a church in Sussex to learn some more. He did a one-year ministry training scheme because the church saw potential in him. And to help with the funding, he did work part-time as a plumber. And that, together with some money from the church, was enough. Things went well, so he stayed on for 2 years further, working specifically with young people. And he's still doing that now, but in the future, hopes to somehow combine plumbing and youth work. We'll wait with interest to see what that might mean. It's clear that in all these cases, the church benefited from the ministry training scheme. And in some cases, the churches still benefit, as that person may stay around. But even if they leave, it also is also great training in ministry for that person. Training that will help them in whichever part of the harvest field God calls them to next. So these are just some examples. There's plenty of room for flexibility. The only fixed parts is that it should involve learning, serving, and the opportunity to test God's call. To finish, I want to go back to these words of Jesus. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." I simply want to ask how you, as a church leadership, can think about this call of Jesus. Every church is different. But I do want to encourage you to pray. To pray for more workers in the harvest field. To pray for this personally, as members of the leadership of a church. But also to pray for it as a church. But I want also to encourage you to think about how your church could act. To help raise up more workers for the harvest field. It may not be through a ministry training scheme. That is just one option. It's an option that we think is worth considering. But the key thing is that we all want to see an increase in ministry and more people out there in God's harvest field doing the work that he's called them to. I'll stop there now. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll now do my best to answer any questions that you might have. Except that I'm not going to give you that opportunity because that is the presentation. If you would like us to come and do that or something similar to that to your church leaderships, be in touch and let us know.
Hello, I'm Graham Nichols from Christchurch Hayward Heath. I have to keep saying it every day because we changed the name, so I chant it over breakfast and dinner and supper, and eventually we'll learn. Good. I just have a couple of minutes to talk very kind of nuts and boltsy about some of the scheme options. Obviously, it's an iterative process where you'll come up with some ideas if you've got a vision that you think a scheme like this is a good idea, and then maybe look at the candidate options you have and the opportunities you have, and then that feeds into the process. So you might change the scheme, but you have to have some thought and some idea what the options are. So that's what the purpose of this little part of the presentation is. Remember, it's about learning and serving and testing gifting. So any scheme shape has to have those three elements and a reasonable amount of it. You know, if it's all serving or all testing, it's not going to be beneficial. So it has to have those three elements, whatever the shape. But let's just think about some elements to the shape. First of all, the time commitment options. Just to open your mind to this in terms of a scheme, the schemes could be full-time or they could be part-time. They could be 1 year. They could be 2 years. In some cases, there's been schemes that are shorter than that, maybe 6 months, as a sort of focused time, where people through job or educational situation suddenly have a kind of 6 month window, that they could serve in. And so it's worth not being kind of closed, to those options. Part-time has some benefit financially, if they're earning in the other part of their part-time. Just in terms of a sort of a real intensity of activity, which is quite good to expose yourself to. Obviously, it has a disadvantage that you haven't got so much time, and it's probably not so flexible because your other time might be very fixed or it might be very demanding, and so you have to kind of shape the whole church around that sort of thing. So there are obviously benefits either way of full or part-time. In terms of remuneration options, there's a few to think about. You could provide a tax-free allowance, which is how the Northwest Partnership seems to operate their schemes, the ones they advertise anyway, where there's something like a £200 a month tax-free allowance that's given. There could be payment given for specific tasks. So you could say this trainee is going to do two children's clubs per week, and that takes 4 hours, so you pay them 4 hours worth of time, and then everything else they do is clearly on a voluntary basis. So that's one other way of paying them. There could be full employment, So to take them fully on your books as an employee, and if that's the case, then you have to observe all the law. You don't have to observe the law if you're doing the other things. You have to observe all the law about employment, so making sure you're taxed correctly and national insurance and minimum wage and any other terms and conditions and pension options and all those sort of things. So that's a serious commitment. You could choose to provide accommodation only, so you find somebody in the church who can house the apprentice, the trainee, so that's another option to think about. Accommodation in these schemes, particularly if it's a younger person, accommodation is one of the big costs. So it's not insignificant to think about providing accommodation for somebody. And it's really worth challenging people in the church to not be so stuffy about opening their homes up, because many of them have spare bedrooms and they're just, you know, keep the rubbish in them or something, or their sewing box or something. And really, not that I despise people who sewing, it's a very worthy activity. For women, but not for men. No, my son-in-law uses the sewing machine, so it's okay. Oh dear. Well, it's a bit of a boring presentation, this bit, so I've got to make it sound a bit interesting. That's the other one, accommodation only. Expenses only is another option. Well, you understand that. The other thing which I suppose I've listed just because it's what we've been doing in Haywards Heath is to support payment through a third party. In particular, there's a separate charity that runs the cafe near the church, and so we employ the apprentice in that cafe on a normal employment basis, and then everything they do in the church is on a voluntary basis, but we provide some money to the cafe so they can do that. So that is an option. There might be some charity or charity shop or cafe or something similar that operates in your area that you're in partnership with, and that might be a way of achieving what you want. Just one other thing to think about to do with remuneration options is that there is a sum of money available for bursaries within Sussex Gospel Partnership, and a little kind of steering group who can allot that. So there's a few £1,000 that could be available for an individual depending on their circumstances and that of the church. So it's definitely worth thinking about that. If you've got a scheme in mind and you can't quite finance it, and you might just need something to bridge the gap, it's definitely worth considering and applying for that. So that's remuneration options. The work focus options, you may want to give someone an opportunity to have a go at virtually everything, you know, from preaching to operating the sound desk, through to visiting old people, young people, toddler groups, playing the guitar, banjo, doing bungee jumping, all the things that church leaders do. Or you could just focus on a particular ministry area. So you may have an area in mind that you really want them to spend their year on, which could be in those various categories of children, old people and so on. Another thing to think about, which perhaps is not often thought about to do with these schemes, is that you sponsor your trainee in an unselfish way to work with a missionary that you support. Obviously, the church doesn't get the benefit in that they can't set out the chairs for you, but the student gets all those benefits of being able to learn and serve and test. And a very interesting experience. So that's worth thinking about as well. All of us support various missionaries, and maybe you think of 6 months they spend working in the church and 6 months they spend abroad or in this country working with that mission partner. So that's definitely worth considering. Okay, that's the work focus options. Lastly, the candidate options. From the examples that James gave in his presentation, obviously your mind's kind of been open to those anyway, but it's worth thinking about all the different age group and stages. So it could be a school leaver. Again, it may not be immediately in your model of what you think these schemes are for, but there may be someone who is about to go to university, takes a year out, or maybe is not going to go to university, has just left school and does, by their circumstances, have an opportunity to serve. So think about school leavers. Could be a postgraduate from your church or from another church that you get to know about. Could be someone who's able from their work to take a sabbatical. So someone in middle age, perhaps, who has the kind of profession where they can do that. So they could take a year out unpaid, but could be a great engine for activity because of their age and experience. Or someone, as we saw in one of those examples, who's retired. So those are some of the candidate options. And what we wanted to do, just to break it up for a few moments, is to have a quick discussion in some twos and threes about the advantages and disadvantages of people at those various stages. So if you think about school leavers, postgraduates, people on sabbatical in the middle of life perhaps, and those who are retired, if you could talk to your neighbour or your neighbour's neighbour about what are the advantages and disadvantages to the church, so just focusing it in that way, of having people at these various stages of life. So if you could do that now, that would be cool.
Sorry you didn't get very long. We're running a little bit short of time. But my name's Al Pickering. I'm a vicar of a couple of churches in Lewis. And I've been asked to speak about, well, two sections actually. Searching for someone to be on your scheme and then selecting a person. So I think the thing that I probably bring to this, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm on the ministry trainee task group. I've never had a ministry trainee, I've never been one, but I come with the kind of dumb questions or the kind of false assumptions that people might have. You know, if I was looking for someone, I think of the kind of things I would be thinking. So the first thing is, and many of you will have found this, it can be difficult to find someone to be on your scheme. There are, maybe some of you have had this, you've advertised and just you haven't ended up with anyone. It's just not been as easy as you thought it was going to be. And maybe you've always thought the all you need to do is get an advert in the briefing, if you've seen that publication or another Christian publication, and then the applicants will just roll in. But again, many of you have maybe found that doesn't work like that. I mean, maybe you read these publications, you see these adverts. But maybe if you're a big church, if you're St Helens, Bishopsgate in London, people have actually heard of you, then you might get someone. But if you're a church that no one's ever heard of, in a town that no one's ever heard of, then maybe an advert might not be the best way. So, a few ideas. I think firstly, be enthusiastic about your church, particularly if you're in a smaller church that no one's ever heard of. What are the particular advantages of someone coming to serve in your church? And there will be some. Maybe you need to give that some time to think and pray about that. I mean, an obvious thing might be that in a very big church, if you have people who are suitable for preaching, they may not get many opportunities to preach, certainly not in a main service, but there can be lots of opportunities in a smaller church to preach. I'm sure there are other advantages as well. Another one to think about is starting at home. Where do you start looking for someone? Well, start at home. And here's a few work out from the middle, from your own church. There's a bit of overlap in these presentations, but we've already thought about, you know, thinking, praying about people. Are there people in my own church? People I actually know already who I've not thought about. Maybe I had no idea they would be interested in a ministry training scheme. Maybe they've got no idea that you were thinking of starting one. Maybe there are people, they're just not the kind of person you would have originally thought of. Maybe you just locked into the idea of getting someone to come who's a young, keen graduate, straight out of university, university degree. But what about some of these other kinds of people we've been thinking about? A retired person, someone taking a break from work, someone who's not had a university education, maybe even someone straight out of school. So that's starting at home. What about going out from there? What about church contacts? There may be people in your church who know someone who might be interested, maybe a relative who's away studying somewhere. Maybe your church has got a link with a kids camp. I'm not suggesting you get kids coming to view on your scheme, but what about the leaders? That's a good place to perhaps put the word out, see if anyone might be interested to come to your church. What about going out a bit further from there? Other local churches, talking to other church leaders, putting the word out. And of course, here we are supporting one another in the Sussex Gospel Partnership. I think that there are, or there should be, a lot of opportunities within the partnership to put the word out that we've got a scheme and we need someone, or we've got someone in our church who needs a church to go to. We've got the information sheet that goes out every one of these partnership meetings. It's possible to get things onto that. It's possible to get things emailed round. You'll have had the emails round about different subjects from SGP. Yeah, it's possible. I think probably one thing I want to say is... sorry, I'm jumping ahead. There's a Saturday morning course as well, putting the word out there, the Saturday morning training course. Maybe some of those are kind of people who might be thinking about moving on to giving a year to go on a ministry training scheme. And, I mean, another idea I had... I've had a bit of contact with the UCCF staff worker for this part of the country, Ben Martin, and he covers Brighton and Chichester and Sussex University Christian Unions. It might be, he's perhaps another person who might know, who could put the word out through him. So there's just a few ideas going out from there. Of course, the advert, a national advert in a national publication is possible. The 938... organisation, which is mentioned as well, they have a website, they have national conferences and things, even have conferences for people who are just thinking about taking a next step into ministry and maybe wanting to come on a scheme. Okay. Next idea, keep in touch with us, and by us I mean the Ministry Training Task Group. On the bottom of your handout there's an email address at the bottom there. trainees@sussexgospelpartnership.org.uk, and it would be great if we could stay in touch with you. If you've be great to know all the churches that have got schemes, be great to know where you are in terms of looking for people, or you've got someone. It would be great to know if you know people who are looking for something. We can't promise to be like a kind of job centre, but it would be, you know, we can put the word out, perhaps we can help. And if it did come to it, we could, rather like the North West Partnership did recently, put out a joint advert in something like The Briefing, rather than you doing it as an individual church. It might have a bit more effect to put out a bigger advert as a partnership. So that's about some things to do with searching for a candidate. And now, selecting candidate a little bit more briefly. And the first thing to say about that... Would you choose this man to be on your scheme? So I don't know where that picture came from, but it's the eyes. But choose carefully. Be careful. Do they wear sleeveless pullovers? sorry if you wear sleeveless pullovers. choose carefully. It's very tempting, I'm sure, if you've just got one person puts themselves forward, to think, well, we've gone to all this trouble, we've got to go with them. Or maybe someone in your church expresses an interest, you know them. It's going to be a bit awkward to say no, they can't come. But it's not difficult to imagine, you might have even experienced it. It can be a great problem for the church to have someone unsuitable coming. Of course, it's a great benefit, a great blessing to have the right kind of person. But you don't jump at the chance of just someone's interested. We've got to go for them. It might be better to wait another year for a more suitable person. Don't be too informal. It's again, it's perhaps a tendency to, particularly if you know the person already, just have a kind of few informal chats and just assume that they know all about your church and never really get anything down on paper. But from what I've heard, it's important to have at least one formal conversation where it's clear about what the scheme's going to involve, what's expected of the person, but also trying to assess what kind of person are they? Would they be suitable to come and be at our church on this kind of scheme? It's important to have something written down in terms of a sort of agreement, a kind of letter of offer for them. And we're going to have some, on the SGP website, we're going to have, when we get these up there, some examples of things like this, a sort of agreement that you can sign offer letter. And we can also put you in touch with other churches that have done those kind of things, and I've got examples of those. And then last thing to say is assess character before abilities. It's tempting to think we need someone to just come in, hit the ground running, get going on things in our church, help us. But more important to be thinking, what sort of person are they? Of course, they need to be someone who loves the Lord, but are they someone who's teachable? Are they someone who can submit to authority? The authority of the Bible, but also the authority of leaders. Many people do have a problem with authority, and that's incredibly difficult if you end up with someone like that. Are they willing to serve? Are they willing to do the boring, not very nice jobs? Are they spiritually hungry? Do they want to grow as Christians? And are they, with the help of the Holy Spirit, trying to live a godly lifestyle? So maybe, and we're going to put some sample questions on the website as well, kind of things that you might like to use, or a starting point for asking questions as you try to select the right person. I'm going to hand over to Brendan now.
Hi, my name's Brendan Martin, and I'm the youth minister of Maresfield and Nutley Parish Churches in East Sussex. And a little bit of my background, I was a part-time apprentice at this church while I worked part-time about 3 years ago. I then worked full-time as a ministry trainee at Maresfield and Nutley Parish Churches. And I'm here to talk about supporting a ministry trainee as someone who's done it at a big church and a small church, just to bring some of my thinking. I think supporting a ministry trainee basically comes down to, and it looked at, thinking about that Timothy passage, being like a father to your ministry trainee. You need to support them in almost every way. And I know you're thinking, oh my goodness, how much time is this going to take? Not as much time as you might think. My vicar, John Hobbs, in order to get me, probably spent 1 or 2 days in preparation for me. And during the time of supporting, he spent about 90 minutes a week meeting with me one-to-one, talking through. So it's not a huge amount of work. There's 5 things I want to talk about. Financial support, we've talked about this already. Make sure they have enough money to live on. The way we got money, because we're a small church, we applied to the bursary for the SGP, we applied to a local big church for money, and most of our money came from people inside the church who gave on top of what they already gave for me specifically. So it didn't affect church funds at all. Next thing is housing support. This isn't as expensive as you think it might be. I've lodged with 3 people. The last one I lodged with for free because I walked her dog while she was away. It's not expensive. It's not prohibitively expensive. But if you're not going to pay them much, it's important that you find them housing and that they don't worry about where they're going to live, because they've got enough to worry about. The third thing I think is quite neglected, social support. You know, ministry is lonely, and for a lot of the ministry trainees, they probably are more likely not to have a wife or husband to go to at the end of the day. So you need to encourage the gift of hospitality from your churches, and by encourage I mean kick your people into being hospitable to them. The other thing I would say is meet with them every day. This doesn't mean you do more work, you just drag them to whatever you're going to. So if you're doing a pastoral meeting that's appropriate for them to be at, you can bring them along too. Have contact with them every day. There have been days in my ministry where I haven't talked to anyone the whole day, and that can be quite hard. So make sure they have enough social support. The fourth thing I have is spiritual support. Meet with them regularly to pray with them, of course, at least an hour a week, 90 minutes a week to meet with them for this. And make sure they have time when they're not leading stuff to be fed themselves and to worship Jesus themselves. Sometimes I think perhaps they're doing the children's work during Sunday schools. They never get a chance to actually sit and listen and praise Jesus. So that's one thing to look out for. The last thing I have to say is ministry support. Set them goals for ministry. You can just coast through and not really know what you've achieved by the end of it. Send them on a course. We've talked about this SGP one. Send them on conferences. I went to one a term. I think that's quite reasonable. One residential, one a year. Give them opportunities to preach. And have you or a member of your team run through and give them feedback. This is how they grow. And the most important thing I would say with ministry support is this. Open up your lives to the ministry trainee. Show them what ministry is like. Tell them of the hard things that you have to deal with. If you can't trust them with sensitive information, perhaps they shouldn't be a ministry trainee. But they need to see from the inside and from through your eyes how ministry works. And they will probably learn most through seeing ministry through your eyes. So open up about the pastoral needs of the church that you're going to. And finally, I'd say back them up. When people complain about the ministry trainee, protect them. They're not a youth worker. If there's a problem with volunteers, that's your problem. If there's a problem with a mother who's going off the rails, that's your problem. They're not trained to deal with crisis or criticism. And so you need to back them up and protect them. So to sum up, it will take you 1 or 2 days before and 90 minutes during to support your ministry trainee. You need to provide for them finances. Don't let them worry about housing. Make sure they're not overly lonely. Look out for their spiritual health and make sure they're being fed, that they're not doing stuff all the time, and help and instruct them in their ministry to expand and get better at it. Oh, and there's a couple of books that I've not read, but they say are good, which is Workers for the Harvest Field, which is the 938 one, and Passing on the Baton by Colin Marshall. People say they're good, if you're thinking about having a ministry training.
Finally, seventh step, seventh S, send out from your ministry training scheme. It would be so easy to see a ministry training scheme as primarily something that benefits your church. I know, it's so tempting, isn't it? I just need an extra pair of hands. Alternatively, it would be really easy to see a ministry training scheme as primarily something that benefits the ministry trainee, because of all the training and all the experience they get. Actually, in reality, ministry training schemes exist for the benefit of God's worldwide mission. And so the last part of the scheme is really to remember the bigger picture. To remember that the harvest field is global, and to ask the Lord of the harvest where he wants to deploy this new labourer next. Now, of course, it might mean that they stay exactly where they are and work with you, in which case, great. It may be they're off to theological college, or overseas missionary work, or some specific Christian work, or off to a secular career. But in this, it would be good to do three things in support of them. And that's firstly to pray with them. Secondly, to make time to help them discern God's will. They will look to you for help and guidance in discerning God's will. And finally, to support them as they make the transition. Wherever they go next, whether it's moving to work as a teacher in a school, or whether it's going to a Muslim-dominated third world country, they will need support. Because whatever path God leads them down, it will mean so much to them to have your support, and to know that you and the church at large are going to be praying for them in the next step as God takes them to another part of the harvest field. And it will of course be a huge privilege to be involved in training and equipping someone for that work that God's calling them to. So that's the final thing to remember, to send out from your ministry training scheme. Hand over to BJ to finish.
We should probably end up where we started, which is start praying. So why don't we turn into twos and threes and just be praying that prayer Jesus told us to pray. Be praying for maybe there's some individuals you'll be mentioning by name. Maybe you haven't got a ministry training scheme and you want to start one. Let's be praying for all these things that we've been thinking about over the last hour. And then who do we hand on to? Nick, will you? Then Nick will come and finish up in a few moments.